This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 13th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 264. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the Big Deal feature, celebrating the fifth anniversary of the Breaker.News podcast with highlights of memorable interviews. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it now finally time for Foreign Minister Melanie Joly to call the most senior Chinese diplomat in Canada? There isn't an ambassador right now, for a meeting to censure China's government for meddling in Canadian elections. I'm not holding my breath because the Trudeau Liberals are in power because they have been too friendly to Beijing at the expense of Canada's national security. They're part of the problem. This headline from Global News demands either a change in attitude or a change in government.
Global News investigation into allegations of foreign interference into Canada's federal election in 2019. Multiple sources tell Global News at least 11 candidates received clandestine funding from entities affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party. Sources also tell Global News Canadian intelligence officials have briefed the Prime Minister on their findings.
Here is how Prime Minister Justin Trudeau reacted November 7th in Montreal.
State actors from around the world, whether it's China or others, are continuing to play aggressive games with our institutions, with our democracies, and that's why we are creating new tools to be able to support them. We are constantly working with our intelligence committees and officials, and we've created, as you know, specific intelligence and national security committee of parliamentarians that are engaged in these issues and others to ensure that we are able to deal with more threats in the future. And we will continue to make the investments and changes necessary to both hold up our rights, our freedoms, and our values as Canadians while keeping us safe from those who would do harm to those values and rights and freedoms.
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre on November 9th in Vancouver.
Well, we're very concerned about the allegations that came to light that the Prime Minister was briefed of foreign interference in our democratic process as early as January. There have been widely publicized allegations of interference in two consecutive elections now. And nothing done. A Prime Minister who sat by and done nothing. He's resisted even opportunities for us to investigate this interference. And so that's why Conservatives have forced hearings at the Procedure and House Affairs Committee to investigate the facts, to find out what happened. We're looking at potential proposals that would bolster our counterintelligence, that would protect Canadian citizens from intimidation, and that would expose any level of interference by any foreign government in our democracy.
The Breaker.News has reported extensively on the Chinese Communist Party's United Front program and its interference in Canadian politics and business at all levels. In 2019, the Breaker.News revealed how pro-CCP protester Eileen Chen worked for Steveston Richmond East Liberal Joe Pescasolito. In 2021, Conservative Kenny Chu lost Steveston Richmond East after a disinformation campaign about his proposal for a foreign agents registry, something that the U.S. and Australia already have. Chinese state media and social media amplified the disinformation campaign before Election Day. I also found evidence that at least two people friendly with the Chinese government actively campaigned with Chu's Liberal opponent and eventual winner, Parham Bains. There is also evidence of Chinese Communist Party efforts to influence provincial and local elections in BC. Pierre Poilievre is right. What Global's Sam Cooper revealed must be investigated at the House of Commons All-Party Committee. Intelligence, security, and election officials need to testify about what they knew and when they knew it. Maybe Trudeau himself should be called to testify under oath. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It was a 5th of November to remember 5 years ago in 2017. That is when the Breaker.News podcast premiered. This is what it sounded like. This is the debut edition of the Breaker.News podcast for the 5th of November 2017. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions. It is a vehicle to stop secrecy, to unravel the spin, and to enable citizens to better scrutinize those who hold power and influence on the west coast of Canada and beyond. I hope you'll tune in weekly and tell your friends, your enemies too, about the Breaker.News. British Columbia is a province in transition since 2017, and the Breaker.News has brought you many of those highlights. On this edition, I'm looking back at some of my most favorite interviews. Out with Christy Clark's BC Liberals, in with John Horgan's NDP, and so many other changes and challenges ever since then, geopolitically, socioeconomically, and environmentally. Integrity BC's Dermot Travis was the guest on the third edition of the podcast, November 19th, 2017. Was the big money era in BC politics really over?
In terms of the omission side, not only do you have the issue of how parties spend their money as being one of the omissions, I think that they missed, one, a golden opportunity to reduce the disclosure requirements in the legislation. Currently, only donors over $250 are disclosed. That has not been changed in the new legislation. Even the Liberal Party proposed lowering it to $100. I think that they've made a mistake in that, and I think they've made a mistake in not adding on what information should now be collected about contributors. And the most important piece of information that needs to be collected about contributors is, who is your employer? Because the one lesson from other jurisdictions that have banned corporate and union donations is some companies in particular that have tried to use their employees or a list of what are called in Quebec strawmen to make political donations on their behalf, and that they are then reimbursed. But it is very much corporate money. SNC-Lavalin recently accepted the ruling of Elections Canada in this regard, that they in fact had done that practice for a number of years at the federal level after corporate donations had been banned in the federal arena.
Just a year later, in November 2018, BC Legislature Speaker Darrell Plekis and his Chief of Staff Alan Mullen exposed corruption in the offices of Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz. Both James and Lenz eventually retired in disgrace. James was convicted of breach of public trust in BC Supreme Court. Plekis and Mullen gave their reaction to me on the June 5th, 2022 edition, podcast number 241.
Not one of those people at the legislature, not one elected official has come forward and said, you know, thank you for doing what you did. Not even close. Well, you know, some people would say, okay, I might not have agreed with everything you did or how you did it, but that never would have happened unless Alan and I had did what we did. It just would never have happened.
That is the voice of Darrell Plekis, the former Speaker of the British Columbia Legislature, reflecting on the surprisingly difficult road to expose corruption and find justice. On May 25th in Abbotsford, I met with Darrell Plekis and his former Chief of Staff Alan Mullen to get their reaction to the conviction of former Clerk Craig James. James was found guilty on May 19th of fraud and breach of trust by a public official for spending almost $1,900 of taxpayers' money at upscale clothing boutiques in London and Vancouver. James will be back in front of Associate Chief Justice Heather Holmes in BC Supreme Court on the 4th of July for a sentencing hearing. The verdict was a major milestone in the corruption scandal of the BC legislature. It was the story that dominated BC news at the end of 2018 and start of 2019. This is part two of my interview with Plekis and Mullen. They found the system was broken at the legislature. Craig James had exploited its weaknesses for his own personal gain. But sometimes the system does work. Police and prosecutors took it seriously, and a judge found James guilty. So I asked Plekis and Mullen what they would say to the public and the people that are still working at the legislature.
Well, I would say first, and both Alan and I would say this, that, you know, many, many thanks to police and prosecutors. Like, you know, we never doubted for a moment that police would put their very best efforts into this. Whilst we, of course, didn't, and it wouldn't have been appropriate for us to talk to prosecutors, we had every confidence in the criminal justice system and of course, the court system as well. So all of that's fine. The problem is, what does it take to get there? In order for it to get there, you need to have an ability for police to have full access. You need to have an ability to get at the truth. You need to have people coming forward telling the truth. And on that front, that's where there's a problem. Like, it was complicated getting information, like, to no end. You know, we had one instance where a police officer came on the property to serve a production order and was told to get the hell off the property. Like, how is that openness and transparency and fairness? How is that the pursuit of truth?
The fundamental culture of the legislature has to change. The fundamental culture. It has to. Otherwise, it goes on and on and on, and nothing changes because people are fearful for their jobs, for their livelihood, for their professional reputations. It needs to change. It needs to get better.
On the December 20th, 2020 edition, former Press Gallery investigative reporter Sean Holman. After Craig James was charged, Holman analyzed Press Gallery coverage of the scandal at the BC legislature on podcast 165.
I would really like to see that I have yet to see is some kind of public explanation and self-reflection for what happened. Why were individuals so skeptical about what Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen had to say? Why was there not more credibility and credence given to the allegations that they were making? And why was there so much of an appearance of favoritism towards Craig James? I think those are legitimate questions, and questions that would be really helpful, I think, for the people who are down there at the time to reflect on. I'm not a big believer in blame per se, but I do feel that when we could have done better, and I'm talking about the media, we do owe it to the public to explain how we could have done better and why we did better. And that's what I would like to see.
Another focus of the Breaker.News podcast, mega events and sports corruption. Athletes are forced to operate under strict rules on the field of play, but what about the people in the suits, in the boardrooms, and the politicians that feed them millions of dollars of taxpayers' money? College of the Holy Cross sports economist Victor Matheson joined me on the July 8th, 2018 edition, podcast number 37.
Both the Olympics and FIFA, who they really make rich is the IOC and FIFA, right? You know, there's about $4 billion on every four-year cycle in FIFA, and that money doesn't get pocketed by the local organizers. That's FIFA's money, which they share a very, very tiny bit with the host country. Same thing with the IOC. IOC, again, about $4, $5, $6 billion amount of money being made over the four-year cycle, and about maybe a third of that is shared with the local hosts to help defray costs. And of course, that doesn't come anywhere close to what it costs to actually host these events.
Late investigative journalist Andrew Jennings was on the March 25th, 2018 edition. Jennings was the author of several books and host of several documentaries that exposed corruption at the core of FIFA and the International Olympic Committee.
Jennings authored Lords of the Rings, Power, Money, and Drugs in the Modern Olympics, and Foul, The Secret World of FIFA, Bribes, Vote Rigging, and Ticket Scandals. He also produced and presented many documentaries for the BBC. Jennings was the inspiration for my work to chronicle the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics, and I was honored to meet him when he came to Vancouver for a speaking engagement before the Games. His work lives on the transparencyandsport.org website.
You know, there's one thing which would sort all these out, and I announce it now and again, and nobody takes any notice, because they're not paid to take any notice, and that is, we have an England, and you have it 100 other countries. I'm sure you've got it in Canada, you've got it in America, and that's freedom of information. Gosh, what a subversive thing that is. We can't possibly. Wait a minute. What is it? It's about kicking a ball about. They're highly paid people. They perform very well. They're a joy to go and see. But it's only kicking a ball about. So why can't the FIFA, with its huge resources, put up a few mil to get a small team together to read the things every day and to put them through? And, of course, overnight, that would clean it up. It just would drive corruption completely out of the window, because every story the press agencies would have to follow. And if they didn't, well, they'd die, I think, because the better stories that come out this way. So I think if you bring this sort of pressure to bear on them, it's not exactly unpleasant. It's just government saying, oh, by the way, you're subject to freedom of information. OK, we won't interfere. Nothing do we. But we put the mechanism there, get on with it. And I think you'd get a most surprising and hopefully a new world of sport. All these people who followed for years and years and just with a heavy heart watched them parading and pompously on the world stage. Actually, there are people who like football. And again, if you didn't know anything, you ask the questions. It's not very expensive compared with the sort of revenues they're expecting to make. So freedom of information now, please.
The Breaker.News podcast is also focused on the rise of China and the Communist Party's negative impact on the lives of Canadians. I spoke to Tiananmen Square protest survivor Zhou Fengshuo when he visited Richmond during the Hong Kong democracy protests of the fall of 2019. This is from podcast 101, September 19th, 2019.
As a Tiananmen survivor, I'm very grateful about Hong Kong, what they have done in the last 30 years to keep the truth and the memory alive. What's happening today is a reincarnation of the Tiananmen democratic movement in Hong Kong. The young people today, they grew up going to the Tiananmen candlelight vigil. Here too, in Vancouver, there is a very strong presence about the Hong Kong people commemorating Tiananmen. That's a very important, essential democratic education for the young generation.
On the same edition, Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West, an outspoken critic of Communist China, he led a boycott of the Chinese government's cocktail party at the Union of BC Municipalities Convention.
In exchange for providing the government of China access to BC mayors and city councillors, I think what we have there is a gross violation of what our responsibility and duties are. I think that it would be wrong if it were any foreign government. But I also think that China presents a unique set of challenges, and I think is particularly appalling and egregious. And that's because China is engaged in a number of actions that are completely hostile to Canadian national interests and to the interests of our citizens. And beyond that, China is also probably almost without rival one of the worst human rights abusers in the entire world.
And finally, some laughs. A regular feature on the Breaker.News podcast, the MMA panel, featuring Mackin, that's me, research co-pollster Mario Canseco, and Simon Fraser University City Programs' Andy Yan. The topic was the saga of the barge that washed up on Sunset Beach in a November 15th, 2021 windstorm. On the July 3rd, 2022 edition, podcast number 245, I asked for Andy and Mario's predictions about when the barge would finally disappear.
The pandemic isn't over until it's over, and the barge isn't gone until it's gone. So first civic politics question in this election year, will the barge be gone before the October 15th civic election, or will the mask mandate return before the October 15th civic election? First, Mario Canseco.
I don't think the barge will be completely gone before the election happens. So based on previous experience, I don't think this is going to be gone and might actually be a nice backdrop as we're preparing for the municipal race.
Andy.
I think it will. I agree with you, Mario, that it will still be there. I think that they're going to have issues in terms of labor, and I think in terms of equipment, there's probably only so many types of boats and as well as workers who know how to deconstruct a barge.
That is the end of the special fifth anniversary feature on the Breaker.News podcast of some of my favorite interviews over the years. Since the Breaker.News podcast debuted on November 5th, 2017, there have been so many interviews and so many great guests. This is just a small, small sampling. Thank you for listening for all these years, and keep on listening. And again, as always, what do you think? Tell me. Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan's population grows 4 months in a row. Taiwan has a population of 23.21 million as of October, down 0.86% year on year. October added 14,000 people, but the total population was down by 202,000. There was a net increase of 19,000 immigrants, mostly in Taipei, New Taipei, and Taichung. Meanwhile, 10,000 couples tied the knot in October, among them more than 9,800 of different sexes and under 200 of the same sex. A total of 4,000 divorces were recorded in the month. In Kyoto news, Japan's eighth COVID wave could surpass previous wave's peak. With coronavirus cases quickly rebounding throughout Japan, the country's eighth pandemic wave may match or exceed the previous wave's peak of more than 260,000 daily cases seen in August. Countrywide, cases jumped 40% from the week before, ministry data showed, while new daily cases reached above 87,000. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong citizen journalist who waved colonial flag during national anthem jailed for 3 months in legal first. The case marks the first sentencing under the national anthem law, which criminalizes disrespecting China's anthem since the city passed the legislation in June 2020. Paula Leung, 42, pleaded guilty to insulting the national anthem and desecrating the current Hong Kong flag at district court on Thursday. She waved a British-era Hong Kong flag at the shopping center in Kwun Tung on July 26th of last year when crowds gathered to watch an Olympics medal ceremony at which fencer Edgar Chung was awarded gold in the men's individual foil event. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Coin TV, two Oregon counties vote to move state lines for a Greater Idaho. The Greater Idaho movement has made headway after two eastern Oregon counties voted to move the state lines for Oregon conservatives who want to live in Idaho, which is a red state. During the midterm election, 60% of Morrow County voters said yes to a county measure to move the county to Idaho. In Wheeler County, 58.15% of voters also said yes to move the Idaho border. The Greater Idaho Movement reports that 11 of the 15 Oregon counties that would be moved to Idaho have voted in support of adjusting the state lines. In Cairo TV, at the least it's kind of gross. Mattresses at Tacoma Hospital oozing fluids. The Washington State Nurses Association says nurses complained months ago. The nurses wanted the mattresses to be replaced, but say it's not happening fast enough. The hospital blames supply chain issues for the delay in replacing the beds and said they have been ordered and are arriving as they become available. In Czech news, Vancouver Island marmot featured on U.S. postage stamps. The United States Postal Service is featuring 20 endangered species on its 2023 stamps, For the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act, and the Vancouver Island marmot has made the list. All the pictures of the animals were chosen from Joel Sartori's collection of 13,000 pictures called PhotoArc, which, according to his website, is a project to document species before they disappear and to get people to care while there's still time. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Métis people of British Columbia. November 16th is the annual Louis Riel Day, commemorating the humanitarian and advocate for Métis people. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 13th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 13th of November in 1922, 100 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld mandatory smallpox vaccination of public school students? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. And a special thank you on this, the 5th anniversary podcast, to all these people who support the Breaker.News podcast via Patreon. Barb, Kevin, MC, Chris, David J., Brian, John, Chris, Lisa, John, Michael, Ian, Leslie, Monde, Laura, Elvio, Barbara, Richard, and Lee. Thank you for supporting the Breaker.News, and you can do the same as well. Until next week.